Chapter 29.
What I've got is about half the materials I need, a crew that's been riding hard all night, an army of walking corpses that's uncomfortably close to my worksite, and two thrice-cursed trees that I'm supposed to turn into a stone arch. In the dark!
Snapped Hibberp. The rotund goblin's headdress shook as he jabbed a meaty finger toward Gorm.
So how about I go back to trying to calibrate an ancient artifact across time and space, and you stop bothering the workers with your questions?
It's just one question, Gorm countered. When are you gonna be done?
Wouldn't we all like to know?
The shaman jabbed a thumb over his shoulder at the small crew of goblins and gremlins working to lash two large trees together at the top.
But that's the thing about tinkering with the fabric of the universe. It's hard to plan for. Also, it takes concentration.
How easy do you suppose it'll be to focus with a pack of ghouls and zombies trying to pick your brains? 'Cause they do that a bit more literally,
snapped Gorm.
It's only a matter of time before some of them take notice of us.
Well, who decided to set up an extraplanar gateway this close to the undead, huh?
Said the goblin.
Because it certainly wasn't my crew.
Do you want to explain to Ashurizu why her troops had to ford the Terrapin River to get to a fight?
Gorm shot back.
Because if not, this is the farthest we could get from the undead.
Well, then it's a good thing we've got professionals protecting us, ain't it?
Said Hibberp.
How about you do your job and let me do mine?
Gorm watched the goblins stalk off.
How much longer?
Bert stuck his head out of Gorm's rucksack, a cigarette dangling from his muzzle.
He doesn't know, said Gorm, turning to join the others. And some help ye were. I thought you came along to help me negotiate with the goblins.
The kobold shrugged.
Not much to negotiate. You both want to get that way gate running as fast as possible. Follow my lead and keep quiet, and he just might do it.
Gorm snorted.
And didn't I ask you not to smoke in my bag?
Probably, said Bert. But you're also the one who said I had to leave patches back with the orcs.
You know a dog would have a hard time keeping up with the horses all night,
said Gorm.
Yeah, a pity.
The kobold tapped the loose ash from the end of his cigarette. Laruna stood as they approached the edge of the worksite.
How much longer until
he doesn't know, Gorm interrupted. But judging from what I see, they're hours away.
We don't have hours, said Caitha. She pointed toward the mountain where Andoran was falling.
The great gates of the city had been rent apart by some unimaginable force, and undead of every foul variety pressed through the hole in the walls. Fires were burning throughout the base, and some had even moved up to the second tier. Ghosts and specters wove through the plumes of black smoke that rose up to join the spiraling, thundering clouds that loomed over Mount Windspar.
"The wards won't hold much longer," said Jin. "The Academy's mages can't keep them up."
The shimmering domes of azure magic that hung over the upper tiers were beginning to flicker and fade, save for the point closest to the wallward side of the third tier. There, the sorceress shields flashed and crackled as a cluster of dark figures attacked them.
"Looks like vampires," said Caitha. "They're weakening the shields." "I should be up on those ramparts," said Laruna, shaking her head. "I could keep the wards up."
"It won't matter much if the ground troops take Malcolm's gate," said Bert. "They'll just go under the shields, and we don't have a way to stop them." "Not until the thrice-cursed waygate is ready, anyway,"
Gorm grumbled. "No, but we might have a way to slow them down." Haraldin looked at Gaste. Gaste nodded. "We'll do a reconnaissance mission," said Haraldin. "A tiny group, deployed to just the right point, can have an outsized impact." Gorm shook his head.
"I see where you're going, but we can't leave Hibberp and his workers undefended."
"We won't," said Haraldin. "You stay behind to protect the waygate, while Gaste and I go to the tiers by the ridge."
"And Caitha and I head for the walls to bolster the wards near the wall," Laruna added. She turned to the elf. "Right?"
"Right," said the ranger, unslinging her bow.
"Wrong," said Gorm. "We have to stick together."
"We have to buy the army of the old dwarven kingdoms time to get here," said Jin. "And their plan might work."
"It might not. It might get us all killed," said Gorm. "After all we've been through, you should know you can't split the party."
"Exactly," said Haraldin. "No matter what happens or what distance separates us, you can't split this party." Caitha grinned.
"We might tactically reconfigure our proximity, but we can never be split."
"We should know," said Laruna. "We tried.
multiple times.
It never works, added Jin.
But...
Gorm cut off as a heavy hand dropped on his shoulder. He looked up at Geist. The weapons master nodded.
Aye.
Gorm's shoulders fell.
You're right. No matter what happens, we're in this together.
Gorm stuck his fist into the center of the group.
Always.
Katha stepped up to press her fist against Gorm's. One by one, the other heroes did the same, shaping their huddle into a six-spoked wagon wheel. Bert scampered up Gorm's arm.
What? What are you doing? What is this?
He muttered in Gorm's ear.
We're doing the hands in the circle thing, Gorm murmured. Yeah, but why do you do it?
Asked Bert.
Why is everybody looking at each other like that? This is weird, right? Is this not weird for lightlings? We're just... It's just a thing we do,
Gorm whispered harshly.
We're part of the team. We're in this together. Well, why don't you just say it? I mean, you did just say it,
said Bert.
We all know what it means. It's culture, said Laruna.
Shared experience and all that, added Jin.
Oh, yeah, I guess.
After a moment's thought, the kobold scampered along the dwarf's arm to extend his own paw into the center.
Still weird, though.
You've really stuck your paw in it now, Rex,
Mrs. Herc muttered to her missing son. All her thoughts were on him. She couldn't tell if she wanted to hold him close or wring his furry neck for bringing her down to the second tier in the middle of a siege, but either way, she ached to have him in her arms. The only thing that helped was talking to him under her breath.
Just look at it out here, she murmured. This is no place for a child.
It was no place for anyone. Whatever calamity had shaken the city occasionally brought debris raining down around her and Aubryn, and Mrs. Herc's shoulder had been battered by a falling shingle. Every scream of Rex's name brought ash and stone dust into her burning lungs. Each corner, each side street, brought a new vision of flames and death.
Now what are we to do, Rex? It doesn't get much worse than this, she mumbled,
giving the cosmos an invitation to demonstrate Nove's second principle of universal irony. Aubryn screamed for Mrs. Herc, and everything got worse. Little Rex was folded up amid the rubble of a burning storefront like a broken toy. One of his paws was wrapped around the wooden sword he'd brought to fight the zombies. The other had been crushed and mangled by falling stones. He didn't move when Feista lifted him, didn't hug her back as she clutched his tiny frame to her heaving chest. She couldn't hear anything but her own howling, could barely feel anything but the void in her heart. All other sensations were distant, like they were happening to someone else. Someone was grabbing her shoulders. Someone was screaming her name. Someone was yelling that he was still breathing.
What?
Mrs. Herc started and looked down at the bundle of fur in her arms. Rex's eyes were firmly shut, but now she could see his tiny ribs rising and falling, slowly. Too slowly. She looked up into Aubryn's eyes.
We have to get out of here, she gasped.
Yes, exactly. We have to get out of here.
The girl pointed down the street, where ghoulish creatures were battling a squad of bannermen.
The undead are in the second tier.
Andoran second tier was the highest point on Andoran accessible from the ridgeward side of the city. The treacherous drops and sharp edges of Mount Windspar's western slope deterred all but the most determined climber. Near the higher tiers, the mountainside was pocked with caves and chasms that could send an unwitting climber to the depths of the dungeons beneath the mountain. If the fall didn't finish off such a foolish climber, the darkness below was filled with horrors eager to do so. Yet a climber with enough skill and dexterity could brave the lower slopes to bypass the southern walls and reach the base or the second tier. It was difficult, and the bannermen on the southern wall would quickly notice anyone scaling the mountain. But the biggest deterrent from entering the city by this surreptitious route was the destination. The climb was a lot of trouble just to wind up a two-story drop from the Underdim or Dark Ridge. As far as I'm concerned, the only difference between dropping into the Dark Ridge and falling into Mount Windspar's dungeon is the color of the cobblestones, Haraldin muttered to Geist as they crept down ramshackle roofs to the ash-choked streets. And that was before the zombies and walking skeletons. Geist nodded and pointed a sword at a wandering band of ghouls and zombies shambling up the street. I see them, my friend. This calls for a stealthy approach.
Haraldin scanned the street. If we wait a moment, we should be able to sneak past them to that alleyway, hide behind the trash bins, and then climb the gutter to the rooftops. From there, we... Geist? Haraldin was surprised to see that the weapons master was already in the thick of the dead. The doppelganger moved with an alien fluidity. His limbs almost seemed to stretch and snap as he wove through his foes. Every swing of his blade sent another limb or head flying into the air, like grim popped corn in a circus vending cart. A moment later it was done. Geist glided back to the bard, his face characteristically stoic, and yet somehow intolerably self-satisfied. Yes, well, impressive as that was, perhaps we should prioritize not getting noticed, Araldin said. We need to get across the tier as quickly as possible. Geist shrugged as he sheathed his weapons. They made their way through the ruined neighborhoods of Andoran's second tier, sneaking, lurking, and occasionally butchering small packs of the dead. They passed by the projectile that had destroyed the Great South Gate, a pillar of stone and earth that had torn the streets and leveled buildings in its path. Eventually they came to a familiar warehouse. You'll recall that there are all sorts of useful tools and devices inside, Haraldin explained to Geist as they approached the main doors of Creative Destruction Incorporated. He tested the doorway and practically giggled when he found it locked. The bard's hands trembled with anticipation as he produced a set of intricate lockpicks from his belt pouch. All that remains is to get inside. He selected the first pick and moved to insert it into the keyhole, but before he touched the lock, it clicked and unlatched. A moment later, the door swung open.
Haraldin?
Geist? Said Boomer.
Well, if you aren't a sight for sore eyes.
Come in,
added Buster. The gremlin ushered them inside hurriedly, where Haraldin could see several workers armed with crossbows stationed in the windows.
What are you two doing here?
I could ask the same. The bard hid his disappointment as he discreetly put away his lockpicks. It looked like they evacuated the lower tiers.
They did, of course, said Boomer.
The stout Scribkin pushed the doors shut behind them.
But there's no way we're abandoning all our gear and equipment to these rotters. We've got some brave men on hazard pay, a warehouse full of supplies, and enough potions, runes, and gadgets to make those walking stiffs pay for every inch they take.
If we're going to go out, we'll go out fighting,
said Buster.
And preferably several days from now, laughed Boomer.
Haraldin raised a finger.
A noble approach, to be sure, he said with a grin. But may I suggest an alternative?
There must be a better way, gasped Laruna, doubled over and holding the edge of the rampart. There's a huge hole in the Great South Gate. It would have been an easier spot to climb up than here. It's also an easier way to get into the city, which is why most of the undead are crowded around it.
Katha notched an enchanted arrow into her bow.
We're trying to avoid being seen for the moment.
A ghostly old sailor flew overhead. His blank eyes opened wider as he recognized the living women beneath him, but an arrow of silver light blasted him back to the afterlife before he could cry out. Katha readied another arrow as she watched the last traces of the spirit evaporate.
Are we almost ready?
Hang on, panted the mage. We're not all accustomed to scaling sheer surfaces.
Katha held her tongue as she shot another curious specter. The wall had stood as the defining feature of Andoran's eastern border since it was built by the Sten, and modern architects had been unwilling or unable to alter the great edifice's stonework when adding a new shorter wall to the southern limits of the base. As such, the corner between the wall and Andoran's southern fortifications was marked by regular gaps and crannies. They made for a notoriously easy climb to the southern ramparts. Katha had scaled it one night on a dare while drunk. The elf peered into the city. Hordes of zombies and skeletons rampaged through the lower tiers. Above the ruined streets, she could see tiny dark shapes attacking the sorcerous wards cast over the upper tiers. The crackling shields faded a little with each assault.
We need to hurry. Katha obliterated a nearby banshee with another arrow. The wards won't last long.
I know,
the mage said, bracing herself against the ramparts. How many vampires are there?
2 dozen or so?
The ranger squinted at the distant figures.
30 on the high side. It's hard to tell with them moving through that light.
Laruna nodded.
The Solomancer's fingers danced in complex patterns, wisps of flame and light dancing between them. Nearby torches flickered and leaned toward the mage. Embers and flames from the burning city danced toward the fiery nexus between her palms. The threads whirled and wove themselves tighter and tighter, bundling into a white-hot singularity. A nearby ghost noticed the light, but Caitha eliminated it with a quick shot.
"Any time now," she told the mage.
Laruna shifted her feet, and tendrils of light extended from the glowing ball between her palms. The strands of silvery luminescence drifted over the city as though blown by a billowing wind, finally snapping into place as their tips reached the shield. White light suddenly spread up the lower part of the ward, casting the broad steps in baroque shadows.
"Are they coming?" the mage growled.
"They're starting to." Caitha readied her bow as several shadows detached themselves from the pack and drifted toward them. She took aim as they flew into range.
"Keep weaving."
The ranger's first shot downed the lead vampire in a cloud of shadow and ash. Her second silver bolt only grazed the next shadow in the pack, and it took another arrow to slay it. By the time she sighted on the third vampire, she could make out the bat-like creature flying toward her.
"Time for some improvised dental work," Caitha muttered, then loosed the shot.
Her enchanted arrow struck home, slamming the onrushing shadow between the gleam of its fangs. Caitha felt a flash of pleasure at a perfect shot finding its mark, but her satisfaction faded when the vampire failed to react. The ranger grimaced and fired another bolt, and then another. The silvery lances slammed into the oncoming vampire again and again, but with no effect. Caitha heard the hint of a laugh as the shadowy figure alighted on the edge of the ramparts, wrapped in leathery wings. When it stood, it had taken the form of a shapely woman with jet-black hair, ruby lips, and a pair of pearly fangs peeking out from beneath her smile.
"What was that about my teeth?" the vampire said in a voice like wind on silk.
Nothing. It was nothing," said Caitha, taking a step back.
"It sounded like something about dental work," said the vampire, tapping her chin. "Or perhaps you were making jokes."
"You know, it was a quip," Caitha shrugged.
"A what?"
"A quip. A joke," the elf mumbled. "You know, everybody's allowed to make just one."
"You're allowed to make one joke in the middle of a fight to the death?"
The vampire's smile turned disdainful.
"Do you have any idea how ridiculous that sounds?"
"I do,"
Laruna growled, still sending strands of magic into the distant wards.
"Just get the wards reinforced," Caitha snapped back.
In one fluid movement, she drew another arrow, notched it, and fired at the vampire.
"I can handle this."
The arrow flew straight and true for the vampire's heart until the undead woman's hand snapped up and plucked it from the air. She held the sizzling bolt in a pale fist, her cruel smile unwavering.
"Oh no, my dear," she said. "I am Lady Devala Karabay III, mistress of 1,000 thralls. I do not make jokes. I do not engage in idle banter. I do not show mercy. And you, most certainly, cannot handle this."
"All right, so it's bad. You've made your point," said Gorm. "We don't know if all the army is going to get through the waygate. I get it."
"I don't think you do. We're absolutely sure some of the army won't make it across before the waygate closes."
Hibberp watched dwarves and Shadowkin marching through the crackling passage.
"You do your best to calibrate things just so, but no matter how well you do it, sending stuff through the gate puts strain on the Thaumite. At some point, that big crystal back at camp is going to have one heck of a fragmenting event, and sooner rather than later."
"Your workers should be able to reweave the sorcery matrix around the fissure," Jin told the goblin, "or even recalibrate the way gate attuned to a chunk of the shattered Thaumite."
"Well, yeah, of course."
Hibberp spoke with the wary condescension of a craftsman whose expertise has been challenged.
"But reweaving or recalibrating is going to take hours, maybe half a day."
"We do not have half a day," said Ashurizu, grimacing at the makeshift archway.
"We ain't got an hour,"
said Gorm, looking at the smoke rising above Andoran. The warding spells shielding the inner tiers were glowing a worrying hue of white.
"We'll just have to hope that the waygate stays open long enough."
His statement was punctuated by a sound like a wine glass breaking, followed by a low twang akin to a bowstring. The dwarves and kobolds currently stepping through the gate were thrown forward as the waygate's magic faded and the laws of physics reasserted themselves. Gorm found himself the target of damning stares from almost everyone within earshot.
Well, I mean, that's...
His excuses withered and died in the heat of the collective gazes on him.
All right, I should have chosen my words better. It's like you've never even heard of Nove's principles of universal irony, grumbled Bert.
Gorm shook his head.
I know about Nove's principles. I mean, it's right there, said Bert. First principle, some things you just don't say out loud.
We call them the teachings of Freck, offered Ashurzu.
I know what I'm not supposed to say, barked Gorm. Can we just go see how many fighters made it through?
The troop count provided another opportunity for reality to deal a blow to expectations.
We already had less troops than we'd want to take on a horde of that size, said Guildmaster Corrigan, surveying the ranks, and now half of them are stuck on the other side of the Ironbreakers.
What do we do now? Asked Darek.
Get information anyway, said Gorm. Whatever we got has to be enough.
Corrigan and Darek began bellowing orders, and the troops launched into motion. The dwarves and Shadowkin began to form ranks quickly. Squads of orcs and larger demi-gnolls were supported by smaller teams of goblins, gnolls, and dwarves. A few ogres and naga attached themselves to squadrons, weapons at the ready. Bert hopped down from Gorm's shoulder.
So, where should I go?
He asked.
I can fight, if I need to.
Gorm smiled at his friend.
Don't you know the average lifespan of a kobold soldier? You've already survived your one battle.
He pointed to Bert's mangled ear. The kobold smiled.
Yeah, I suppose. Come on, said Gorm. Let's connect you with Lady Ashurzu. You can work with the chieftain and her wise ones in the healer's tent.
Across the muddied road, they found Ashurzu and her advisors in discussions with Commander Harak of the dwarves and several fathers. Ashurzu shook her head.
I know this isn't ideal.
Not ideal, the old dwarf sputtered. This thrice-cursed plan is falling apart.
Perhaps, but we must press on anyway.
Ashurzu's hand unconsciously played with the icon of Fulgen around her neck.
It's our only chance at success.
You know she's right, sir, Gorm added.
Harak looked at the resolve in the faces around him, and his shoulders fell.
Aye, you're right, but burn the ashes the gods have led us down a dark shaft on this one.
Ashurzu nodded.
The gods do as they will.
The bastards,
Bert muttered under his breath.
And we do as we must,
the chieftain finished, looking back at the burning city of Andoran.
Well, looks like we're all done for, said the elderly bannerman. Them walking bones got us trapped, and the king don't seem to be doing too well neither.
General Gergen allowed herself to glance across the second tier to the ruins of Fafnir's Gate, now little more than a pile of rubble. Atop the fallen stones, King Johan and the Lich remained locked in a fierce duel. Yet in the mounting twilight, the general could see that the golden aura surrounding the paladin was fading, and the king's breaths were visibly labored.
Focus on what we can do, Gwyn, she told the leathery old soldier.
Ain't much, said Gwyn, scratching at his snowy beard. Men been fighting hard all night, and the second tier's all but overrun. The base never had a chance. Captain Federan ain't sure how much longer he can hold Malcolm's Gate, and the wards look like they'll come down any minute.
Take heart, friends, said Cedric.
The young bannerman was starry-eyed as he stared out over the carnage.
I've heard it said that it is always darkest just before the dawn.
That's the spirit, Cedric. General Gergen notched an arrow in her bow of unrelenting flames, sighted, and sent a distant ghoul alight.
That's daft, said Gwyn. It's always darkest in the middle of the night.
Yes, but I mean, you can see all them skeletons and ghosts pressing in on us now, can't you? It's light enough to shoot them, ain't it?
It certainly is, said General Gergen pointedly. She immolated another zombie with a well-timed shot.
3-4 hours ago, it was darker than a river hag's britches out there, said Gwyn with certainty. Definitely darker than now.
It's an expression, said Cedric, finally notching an arrow. But look!
He pointed. The clouds broke beyond the wall, and the first warm light of dawn spilled over the plains. Celestial rays of golden sun blazed across the sky and fell impotently on the empty horizon.
"Yep, that's a sunrise," said Gwyn, clearly unimpressed.
Cedric's shoulders fell.
"I just thought, you know, maybe the gods would have some miraculous way to save us with the coming of the dawn."
Gwyn snorted and spit over the edge of the ramparts.
"Don't seem as much."
"You know, the noble heroes, or a big army, or a powerful wizard of light, they always come with the dawn to save the beleaguered defenders."
Cedric peered into the distance, still hopeful.
"Well, clearly not always," said Gwyn.
"It just seems like a thematically appropriate moment to..."
"We're all there is now, Cedric," barked General Gergen. "Stop making burning wishes and start shooting thrice-cursed arrows."
"But no argument, soldier. But General, look closer."
General Gergen squinted at the horizon and then shifted her gaze closer to the ruined walls of Andoran. A small army had arrived from nowhere, as if it had materialized somewhere near the river downs. They weren't many, but they were forming ranks and preparing a charge.
"Is that the dwarves?"
Cedric wondered aloud, looking at the banners carried by the army.
"It's the banner of the Old Kingdoms."
"They look too tall for that. Or short.
And green,"
puzzled Gwyn, scratching his chin.
"If and I didn't know better, I'd say they was orcs and goblins."
"It doesn't matter," breathed General Gergen. "They're reinforcements."